This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, cranking out 50,000 watts. Good first 2 hours in the book. In the opening hour, we spoke with Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com about the game yesterday against the Bears and got his thoughts on it. So please go to his website, ChiefsDigest.com, and read all of his thoughts about yesterday's game. Also, check out the podcast if you missed it. Good stuff with Matt, as always. We just wrapped up with Allie Trost from the Blue Testament talking Sporting KC. Finished the month of August with four straight wins. Actually, they didn't lose in August. They won every game in August. Four wins, four shutouts. So good stuff with Allie Trost. And then coming up at the bottom of the hour here, we will have Barton Simmons from CBSSports.com talking college football. Finally going to see some games next week. Some good ones as well. So we'll do that at the bottom of the hour. Right now, we want to do a segment we've done for a few weeks called Jedlines, where Jed Marshall picks out news and information from the world. It could be sports, could be entertainment, could be just weird, wild stuff. I don't know. So Jed picks them out. I don't know what they are. And then Jed will read it, and then I'll react to it. So that's how it goes. Jed, take it away.
All right. Thanks, Brad. All right. So you always give me a hard time because we don't really get to a lot of positive news in this segment.
Sure.
So I wanted to start off with something positive.
Okay.
Did you hear about what's going on with Texas superstar Andrew Jones? He's been in the news recently.
Texas superstar Andrew Jones.
University of Texas.
No, I have not heard.
Okay, well, Andrew Jones, you might remember last year he missed most of, well, I think all of the season because he was undergoing chemotherapy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes, yes.
It was announced Friday that he actually is done with chemotherapy, and here is a tweet from him, at drew.cash. It says, "The last months have been crazy and stressful for me and my family, but with the grace of God, we can see a better day. I like to thank..." Oh, you misspelled this. "I like to thank the people and all the fans for the for their support. Hashtag hook'em, hashtag AJ1, boom," and then his fingers crossed. But essentially, he is done with his chemotherapy, and his leukemia is basically in remission, and he's going to be able to take the hoop or the court this season. What do you make of this, Brad?
It's fantastic. I always love the comeback stories. We've seen it right here with Eric Berry. And I think didn't Texas have a basketball player who was battling?
That was who I just was talking about.
I thought you said football. Pardon me. That's great. I know the Texas players were wearing T-shirts to support him last year during warm-ups and always made him feel like he was still part of the team. And I think that's great. And great for Shaka Smart and his program. And yeah, the biggest thing isn't basketball. I mean, to get back and play is great. That's certainly a confidence builder. But being healthy is the most important thing. So hopefully it stays in remission. And I know you have to do a lot of checkups. They got to do a lot of blood work. You always got to be checked on. So I'm glad. I'm happy. That's a good story.
Absolutely. I thought that'd be a good way to start off. All right. Another news, Brad, here. Jedline number two. I wish I could say my own name. You think I would have that down?
Nope.
No, I do not.
Nope.
Did you see what happened with Hugo Lloris, who is the goaltender who plays for Tottenham?
I did not. I know you were talking about him this morning, but you did not. I did not hear about a story.
No, he was arrested this Friday morning at 2:20 a.m. for drunk driving charges. Let's see here. Cops have suspected that he was plastered, saying that he took and failed a breathalyzer and hit the stop. He was taken to Charing Cross Police Station, where he was booked and spent 7 hours in custody. Not great.
No, and I'm assuming that's somewhere in London, because Tottenham is in London. Yeah, I mean, it's still amazing in this day and age with Ubers and Lyfts and cabs, and these guys make hundreds of millions of dollars in European soccer, that you couldn't get a ride because you didn't want to leave your Rolls Royce or your Porsche at the bar. I don't know. Yeah, just get a ride. Just get a ride. It's I don't see it stopping anytime soon because these stories happen all the time.
No, it's just one of those things. We talked about it with everything that's gone on with coaches and different people. When you have that much money, you think that you're above the law. And it's for people who don't understand how much money European soccer players make. They make millions upon millions of dollars. They literally sleep on piles of money.
Yes.
And their blankets are more money.
Yes.
Which must be a nice problem to have. All right, Brad, next Jedline. Did you see that Justin Verlander was tagged with a $1 million bill the other day?
Yes, I saw that. He was in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, he was in Los Angeles where he was hit with a $1 million bill while he was at Starbucks. And when the miscellaneous charge came across, it said that he was, or it was for a miscellaneous charge being, quote, Dodger killer. The Beverly Hills Hotel where the Starbucks was located basically went on to say that it was a prank, and Verlander did end up paying the, I think, like $60 that he paid for breakfast.
I saw how much they were paying for, like a salad was like $18 or something?
He got eggs and a coffee and one other thing, and it was, yeah, like $62. I mean, he makes hundreds of millions of dollars also, so. But it is L.A. I've been there. It's
expensive. No, when I travel with the Royals and we played against the Angels, you knew not to eat at the hotel. If you were going to get,
You can't eat anywhere.
You can't, No. Well, we found places during the playoff runs in 14. We found some more affordable places down the road. Just don't eat at the hotel. If you're in L.A., go to the grocery store and buy a sleeve of bagels and get by for a week. You can do that.
I guess.
So, but I think that was funny, though, that they put Dodger Killer on his bill and charged him $1 million. I think that's hilarious.
Absolutely. All right, Brad, next Jedline. Did you watch any of the Big Three Championship? They had the championship game on Friday night, and I'm a big enough nerd that I had no plans, so I watched pretty much the whole season.
I kind of forgot it was on, so I didn't watch it, and it's not something I would just carve out time for on my own, but was it a Duke flavor to that game? Weren't there a lot of former Duke guys or Kentucky guys? There was some school.
Corey Maggette was one of the strongest players.
Well,
he ended up winning the MVP. He played pretty well. I think he scored quite a few points.
It looks like he's 50, and he really shouldn't.
I think you might be thinking of, the Rhode Island guy. His name escapes me for whatever reason. But there's a bunch of talk about Kobe Bryant coming back and playing in the Big Three. There was talk from the commissioner or co-founder. His name's Jeff Quatenetz, I believe. He said that he is hearing from people that Kobe Bryant will play. Kobe Bryant has come out and now refuted that. And Big Baby Davis is now weighing in, who was on Team Power, saying that the Big Three doesn't need him, but they still want Kobe to play. What do you make of this? Should Kobe come back?
Well, first of all, the commissioner's an idiot. This was a pure PR play because every website from ESPN to CBSSports.com to whatever, name your sports website of choice, every website had to put that first story on there. Kobe might play in the Big Three! That's a horse manure move by that commissioner to get cheap attention. Kobe's worth like $1 billion. What does it take to get him out of bed and dribble a ball? How much are you going to pay Kobe to play 3-on-3 basketball? Unless it's a charity event, Kobe ain't playing in the Big Three. Maybe 10 years from now when he misses the game. He's no reason to play. He's got a family. He's got a pile of cash. Sorry, not doing it.
Kobe Bryant, though, is a sick enough competitor. He's like Jordan. I could see him coming back and playing that and just schooling like Big Baby and Andre Emmett and the other riffraff that goes on. I mean, those guys are good players, but a lot of them you're like, man, that guy's still hanging around.
They were down roster guys. We don't need him, but we want him. Good for you.
Right.
Good for you.
All right, next Jedline. More basketball news. Al Harrington comes out saying that the Lakers screwed up the 2017 draft by not drafting Jason Tatum. He essentially came out and told TMZ Sports that, Tatum should have gone number two and that the Lakers are fools, saying, quote, yes, the Lakers made a horrible decision. That kid is the goods of Jason Tatum, going on further to say that kid wants to be great. You know what I'm saying? Sky's the limit for the Sun.
Does Al Harrington still play for the Lakers?
No.
It's a strong statement. I'm not saying he's wrong. Lonzo Ball had an unremarkable rookie season. The other kid, Kuzma, is better. Kid they took in the second round, right? Or was it later in the first?
I can't remember.
Kuzma was the better player.
Too many
last
news
year.
Stories, Brad. Okay. Jedlines is a worldwide
I'm saying
enterprise back here.
Al Harrington is correct. The Lakers would be better off if they'd have drafted Jason Tatum. Absolutely correct.
Absolutely. Well, they wouldn't have the clown show of LeVar Ball.
Which
and
would
then,
be better.
Well, absolutely.
I don't like clown
Jason
shows.
Tatum's a much better player.
Yes.
All right, next Jedline, Brad. Did you see Swaggy P's in the news? Do you know why?
I do not. I don't. Swaggy P doesn't show up on my Twitter timeline all that much.
You don't follow Swaggy
no,
P?
No, I don't.
Oh, man. Well, you should. That guy's insane also. NBA star Nick Young, better known as Swaggy P, was arrested in Hollywood late Friday night after an incident during a traffic stop with police. Law enforcement sources tell us the former Golden State Warriors player was pulled over just before midnight for a traffic violation when something went wrong. We're told the 33-year-old refused to cooperate with officers on the scene, and he was arrested for obstruction of justice. What do you make of this, Brad? It's not Swaggy's first run-in with the law.
Back
in 06, he was cited for bumping music too loud while driving around in Hollywood. So,
well, that happens. I think Justin Bieber's gotten in trouble for that before. His neighbors call on him all the time for his music. You know, if this has happened before and it's a pattern, then that's his problem. I always tell my kids, if you get pulled over, don't do anything that can get you in trouble. Give them your license. Give them your registration. You better have your insurance card. Follow the rules. Don't argue.
I'm not sure Swaggy P makes the best life decisions because he does have a daughter with Iggy Azalea, and then he got back with his ex. So not necessarily making the best life decisions.
Yep.
He also has like neck tattoos. Those had to be painful. All right, moving on. Next Jedline. Brad, there is an ex-Laker who says that LeBron needs at least 3 rings in L.A., for them to put a statue of him in front of the Forum. What do you make of this? Or I guess it'd be the Staples Center now. I always want to call it the Forum.
It's like the Marv Albert. Hearing it from the Forum crowd! It's my best Marv Albert. That's all I got for you.
That's bad.
Considering the history of the Lakers and those who do have statues in front of what was formerly the Forum, that might be accurate. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of time left in his career to help that franchise get turned around and rack up 3 rings. I mean, you got Magic has a statue, right? He's got a ton of rings. Kareem, bag of rings. Shaq has a statue, right? He's got rings. I don't know, 3, 2 maybe? And how long do you play? I mean, let's say, you know, somebody came to the Royals and played 3 seasons and won 2 World Series. Is that trophy worthy? No. You got to do something. Lakers, you got to do something.
And that's essentially what this player says. I just find it funny that this player is Devin George.
Ooh.
Who's making these...
He had a decent career, but...
Yeah, he was a fine NBA player, right. But he's talking about, you know, if he wins what he's... Here are his quotes. I think 1 championship, I think it would be no consideration. 2, probably no consideration. 3, I think they may be like, should we talk about it? End quote. But yeah, I mean, it is a fair point. The Lakers do have 14 championships as a franchise, but for Devin George to come out and be making these statements, I'm like, man, whatever.
I wonder if he's an analyst for somebody and that's how it came up. Yeah, I mean, if you're a Laker, you got to do something. They don't give you participation trophies because you're LeBron James. 3 might be, well, 2, I think 2 gets you in the conversation. But anyway, because he's not going to pile up enough individual stats. Didn't have enough time left. But.
No, he's pretty high up on all the NBA, you know, like all-time lists. All right, next Jedline, Brad. Ben McLemore, former KU.
Yep.
I don't even know if star is the right word there. And even in this.
Wasn't there long enough.
It doesn't even refer to him as an NBA star. It refers to him as an NBA guard. It says that the kneeling NFL players are not representing America. Ben McLemore has strong words for kneeling NFL players, telling TMZ Sports they're not representing the nation, but their message is getting lost. Or they're not only disrespecting the nation, but their message is getting lost in the controversy, too. The Kings guard opened up about the issue outside a, let's say, watering hole in Hollywood. Not a great place to be spending that NBA money because he might not make a roster. But basically saying that everybody needs to stop kneeling. Quote, you should always represent our nation, Ben says. Quote, that's how I feel. I think you always should, end quote.
Well, see, the NBA solved this problem a long time ago, and that's why Adam Silver is the best commissioner in professional sports. NBA decided years ago, let's talk to the players about it. Tell you what, if you all stand during the national anthem, either on the free throw line or in front of your bench, that'd be great, and we'll help you out and help you promote and support any causes you like, charity causes, social causes, whatever it is, we're there for you. And they routinely do it. NBA players speak out all the time. I think the one thing he's right about is the message is being lost, because now I was reading this recap of the Chiefs game yesterday, the Chiefs-Bears game. They actually have a, okay, so you go through the game story, right? Then it says, they've got the injury update, who they're playing next, and then it says national anthem. There were no protests during the anthem. It's become about the kneeling and not about what they're kneeling about. That's what's happened. And whether it's the player's fault, whether it's the president's fault, whether it's the owners of NFL teams' fault, I don't know. But the message is being lost. Now it's specifically about the act of kneeling and not about the social cause. I'm not sure. I don't have the answer for you, because the owners clearly are not going to talk to the players about this in any reasonable fashion, at least not yet. So I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's too big of a topic, but I just thought it was interesting that Ben McLemore was the one speaking out
about
it.
The NBA doesn't have the problem.
No, they don't. And they actually give their players a platform to speak in
all the time,
whatever manner they want. They do, all of the players stand for the anthem, though. All right, switching over to the world of football, Brad, LaDainian Tomlinson says that he's going to go ahead and weigh in on the Jets quarterback controversy, saying that Well, I mean, he's a former Jet. He's in the Hall of Fame.
He's there for a cup of coffee.
His opinion's better than yours.
Yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't you?
Saying that he thinks Teddy Bridgewater should start over Sam Darnold. What do you make of this, Brad?
I would, because the Jets are not going to win anything this year. Might as well let Sam Darnold learn. Let Teddy Bridgewater get his rear end kick, because their offensive line is manure. Whatever the Jets want to do is fine, because they've become irrelevant in the National Football League, which is to be in a town like New York and be irrelevant, that's pretty hard to do. They've been trying for a long time to be this bad.
They've found a way to do it.
Didn't they beat the Chiefs last year? Probably. They found the secret to being awful.
I know the Giants did.
Year in and year out.
They found
the sweet spot for nobody caring about their team.
You make enough bad draft picks, you're going to get forgotten pretty quickly. All right, next headline, Brad.
Yep.
Asante Samuel says that he belongs in the Hall of Fame. A lot of guys coming out saying that they think they should be in the Hall of Fame lately, but he'll be up for eligibility in the 19 class, but that class is already filled with Ed Reed, Champ Bailey, Tony Gonzalez, and Edgerrin James, Isaac Bruce, and John Lynch, who are all waiting in front of Asante Samuel. What do you think about this? Is Asante Samuel a Hall of Famer?
I think he's certainly in the discussion. To be honest, I'd have to go back and look at his stats and things like that. But he's in the conversation. And the National Football League, well, it's not the National Football League. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has problems with getting guys in and the order in which they get in. Is that committee of writers meets and they hash it out for hours and days and whatever, and then it's a limited number. Boy, they have a lot of trouble. They haven't figured out how to get the right number of guys in, because there's so many guys who are waiting their turn. I mean, they're finally getting Johnny Robinson from the Chiefs Super Bowl team in 50 years later.
My friend Sean has a good way of thinking about the NFL Hall of Fame. You say the person's name, and then you say Hall of Famer afterwards. Asante Samuel, Hall of Famer. Doesn't sound right. I don't think he gets in, but I do think it's weird that all these players are taking to campaigning for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe you get their name out there, but I think it's kind of in poor form. All right, Brad, next headline.
Yeah.
Do you remember ex-NFL quarterback Eric Kramer?
Yes. He played with the Lions for a long time, I believe, Eric Kramer.
He started 46 games for the Bears, 94 through 98, and played 10-year career in the NFL with the Falcons, Lions, Chargers, and Bears.
Okay.
All right. Well,
he's not a Hall of Famer, by the way.
He is not a Hall of Famer. This one's pretty weird. He is coming out saying that he wants his marriage annulled. His brain is messed up. Former NFL quarterback Eric Kramer wants to erase his marriage from the books, claiming his 2015 15 failed suicide attempts left him with a lack of mental capacity to legally consent to marriage. According to new legal documents, Kramer says his wife, Courtney Baird, stole $50,000 of his money before they wed, and now she's filed for divorce. He says before they got married, Baird, quote, exerted undue influence upon him to convince him, given my weakened mental state, that her actions were not wrongful. Now Kramer claims the 2017 marriage, which lasted less than a year and a half, never should have happened in the first place because he suffered a traumatic brain injury when he attempted suicide. Essentially, now this guy is trying to get his whole marriage annulled, and it's a horrible mess. But what do you make of this?
Well, it's awful. I don't pretend to be an expert on these sort of things. I mean, good luck spending money on lawyers for the next 5 years and people who can do medical and mental evaluations. That's awful.
Well, it goes on in the story to talk about his playing career and stuff like that, though he wasn't necessarily a star, but he did play enough to got hit in the head enough that his suicide attempts were possibly led on by CTE. And all of this taking advantage of people when they're in a diminished state, which NFL players, like it or not, can definitely have happened. I don't know. I just thought maybe you had more to expand upon about the safety of the game.
That's awful. Ugh.
All right. Well, we'll move on to another kind of football. Deadline number, 15 here. Alexei Lalas says that his trash talk made Wayne Rooney better, essentially saying that his comments when he first came out and said that Wayne Rooney coming over to play in MLS, he said that that was, quote, a joke, and saying that he was just coming for the money. And now that he's actually scored a couple of goals, racking up 3 goals and 3 assists in his first 8 games, Alexei Lalas is now coming out saying that his trash talk made him a better player. Brad, what do you make of this?
I wasn't a fan of the signing when it was first announced. I agreed with Alexei Lalas. I thought he was coming over here for a check. He's at the end of his career. What motivation can he possibly have? But he's been outstanding for DC United. However, Wayne Rooney has enough championships in the English Premier League, Champions League with Manchester United. He's probably worth a couple $100 million. I think Alexei Lalas had absolutely zero to do with Wayne Rooney playing better. I think Alexei Lalas is fine on television. I like him, but no, why? What? Yeah, Wayne Rooney's down there. Did you hear what Alexei Lalas said about me? I'll go out here and I'll show that redhead former national team player who failed in Italy. No, that never happened.
Wayne Rooney has red hair too, so I don't think he could be talking about hair color.
I think Alexei Lalas is holding on to his red hair.
Might
have a little help there.
Snap, shots fired.
Yeah.
At Brad K. Porter, Alexei
Wayne
Lalas.
Wayne Rooney put fake hair on. He's got it's well known. That's public in England.
Oh, okay.
Some assistance. Yeah.
Right on.
Up top.
Good stuff. All right, Brad, 2 more, and then we got to get you a break.
Okay.
I'm going to read the headline here and just let you react. If you want more details, let me know. Novelty hand grenades.
Oh,
grenades
boy. That's a great start right there.
Look at you.
Novelty
airport.
Hand grenades. Okay. Good one. Okay.
Novelty hand grenades found in checked luggage at airport.
One of the dumbest things you could do.
This happened in Newark, New Jersey. Authorities say two suspected hand grenades were found in a woman's checked bag at Newark Liberty International Airport, but they were actually novelty bottle openers. TSA officials say the realistic replicas were found on Tuesday morning. The woman evidently was allowed to board her flight, but her luggage didn't make it due to the delay. Would you ever bring a novelty hand grenade bottle opener on a plane with you?
No.
Would you ever bring a bottle opener with you?
No, because that would probably fall into the sharp objects you're not allowed to bring onto an airplane. No. When I'm flying, it's like I got my book and a newspaper, and that's about it. That's all I'm carrying on the plane.
I'm with you.
And snacks, because they don't give you anything anymore.
People are stupid. This one goes on to further confirm my assertion that people are stupid. Brad family was sickened by eating wild, quote, vomiter mushrooms. This is Annandale, Virginia. Members of a family in Northern Virginia fell ill and needed hospital attention after eating a meal containing wild mushrooms picked near their apartment complex. The Washington Post reported Wednesday that they experienced vomiting and stomach pains for a few hours Fairfax County fire officials say poison control, basically the mushrooms are known as vomiter mushrooms. What do you make of this, Brad?
Look, there are different kinds of mushrooms out there. And I know people who like to hunt, they call it hunting mushrooms. They actually call it that. I would not randomly pick a mushroom and serve it without absolutely knowing what the hell kind of mushroom it is.
I only like certain kinds of mushrooms.
You better know which ones you can eat and which ones you can't eat. That's all I got to say. I'm not randomly picking one out of the yard or in the forest unless I know exactly what it is.
I'm with you. Those are Jedlines.
All right. On that note, we will take a timeout, and we'll talk about something other than mushrooms next. We'll talk college football with Barton Simmons from CBSSports.com. Finally, college football gets rolling next weekend. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is here. We're live in the Riley House Studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to our final half hour here on Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest, cranking out 50,000 watts. I'm your host, Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is here. We're live in the Rally House Studios. Joining us now on the Sprint guest line is Barton Simmons from CBSSports.com. Barton, how are you doing on this Sunday morning?
I'm doing great. I'm enjoying the last full weekend without football. Full speed ahead here after this.
I was going to say, there's a lot of people who are not enjoying it because they wanted to get here. It's been a long couple of weeks, and particularly here in Kansas City with the Royals are not playing well. They don't have our attention, even though Sporting KC is. But people want to see Mizzou and K-State, and I'm not sure how much of a thirst for Kansas football there is. But we're excited to have something else to watch.
yeah. We got a little taste yesterday, Wyoming and Rice and Colorado State. Hawaii had a pretty interesting kind of appetizer last night to give us some fireworks. But you're right. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun when it kicks off in earnest here this weekend.
I was looking at the schedule coming up for next week and games that kind of caught my attention. I'm going to go with, the first one that jumps out to me is that 2:30 Central Time game next week between number 6 Washington and number 9 Auburn. We had a discussion last week. I think Chris Peterson is probably the most underrated Power 5 coach in college football. He doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't showboat a lot. He doesn't make dramatic statements. All he does is win a ton of football games every year and goes to big bowl games.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's – I mean, we did – for CBS, they had us do sort of a coach rankings.
Yes, I did see, yeah.
Every coach
I saw that.
In the Power 5, yeah. And I want to say I had Chris Peterson – fourth, I feel like that's a pretty defensible position, and you could probably make a case that he's even higher than that. Just given, and the way I saw that too is not just sort of what he's done at Washington and what he's done at Boise State, but I looked at it in terms of the trajectory of Washington too. Like when I look at things, I come from a recruiting sort of foundation, and so I see how these guys are recruiting. I see the young people coming up in the program. This is not just sort of like the 2018 season isn't some last chance for Washington. I mean, they are built to stay, built to last. Like, this is a program that is going to be among the national elites indefinitely, really. And he does it, like you mentioned, I mean, he kind of does it in an understated way. And a lot of that is just, particularly on the backdrop of sort of the scandals or distractions or whatever you want to call going on at Maryland and Ohio State right now. Chris Peterson is so focused on sort of building the program the right way, on treating people the right way, on, he doesn't look at film until he's got the transcripts and sees all the and gets all the off-field stuff figured out. And so it's just it's a refreshing way to see a program built and see a head coach operate.
So how does – I guess my question about Chris Peterson is how he does it at Washington. Look, Seattle's a great city. I love Seattle. And I love their stadium. God, it looks like the bleachers stretch a mile into the air. So I love all of that stuff about it. But it is the Pacific Northwest. Guys from Florida and Texas and Louisiana and Southern California may not want to go up there. So what is Chris Peterson's, I guess, recipe for getting high-level talent and getting them to Seattle?
Well, I think it is about attracting them to sort of the culture of that program. And I think kids that get around that program and get around that culture, it is, I think, unique and authentic, and that's certainly appealing. But, you know, I really think that those West Coast programs, really all those Pac-12 programs, I think that there's not as many of a collection of just sort of teams concentrated in an area like there is in the Southeast with the SEC or even the Big 12 in Texas. The West, that sort of whole Western region, is so spread out, and there's the powerhouse programs or the sort of high level programs are a little more spaced out as well, and there's fewer of them. But I really think that if you handle evaluation properly, if you really work hard and outwork people on the evaluation end, you can really beat people out there just getting the right guys, because they're out there. I mean, if you look at the NFL draft results, I mean, there are stretches where California has the most players drafted in the NFL. And I think, you know, when you look at where those guys come from, they're not all from USC and UCLA. I mean, those guys are spread out everywhere, and it's because, you know, the lazy recruiters will just go to LA County and just set up shop and pick out the big name guys. But if you get into the nooks and crannies out there, you can really find success. I think Washington has done a great job of evaluating and finding those guys, whether that be in Hawaii or the Pacific Northwest or Southern California. I think they just do a really good job of their process.
We're speaking with Barton Simmons from CBSSports.com. College football right around the corner. The first big weekend coming up, a couple of games last night or this weekend. Two other games, a couple of big games, Michigan and Notre Dame. And, you know, Michigan's 14, Notre Dame is 12. And there's 100 storylines for this game, Barton. But we can look at the coaches. Certainly they're both high-profile coaches. When we look at Jim Harbaugh, people like to bring up his poor record against big opponents like Ohio State and going to be Notre Dame. What is it about Jim Harbaugh? Because he hasn't done great things at Michigan yet, but there just seems to be a boatload of people who can't wait to see him fail. And I get it. He's quirky. He's a little bit different. When he talks to the media, he doesn't come off as the swellest guy in the world. To me, that doesn't matter. But there are things about him that people just do not like, and people want him to fail. And I'm not sure why.
Yeah, it is interesting. And look, I mean, I think Jim Harbaugh, when he arrived at Michigan, he was as hyped as anybody out there, and the way he recruited sort of rubbed people the wrong way. And he's sort of unabashedly going to promote the program and do things to catch people's attention, and it's. And I don't know. I don't know why it sort of created this national perspective that sort of like the sort of Harbaugh against the world kind of deal. But I'll say this. Like, I kind of agree with you in this. Look, yeah, Michigan was 8-5 last year. Okay. I mean, they lost to South Carolina in the bowl. Yeah, but like last year, let's not forget that after 2016, they set a record for guys that went to the NFL or were drafted in the NFL draft. They were 10-3 in consecutive seasons after going 5-7 before Jim Harbaugh got there. And I know, sure, yeah, they've been like bad against the rivals, but this is not some deal where Jim Harbaugh's just out there getting out coached. I mean, they lost in double overtime to Ohio State by a controversial spot, you know, and they lost to Michigan State on a blocked punt with no time left, return for a touchdown. Like, these are close games.
Right.
He's not going to lose to them forever. And my other sort of point on Michigan, why I feel like they got a chance to be pretty good this year is, look, last year wasn't supposed to be the year. I think people were sort of, because it was Jim Harbaugh and because there's such high expectations for him, some people maybe overvalued what they could do last year. And then, you know, they fell short of those sort of unrealistic expectations, but this was always supposed to be the year, 2018. And so the year has arrived, and they are as talented as they were supposed to be. They have a quarterback now. They have a rough schedule, but if you think that Michigan is not prepared to have a really big season, I think you're going to be mistaken. I actually believe Michigan is going to be sort of a juggernaut once again this fall.
All right, we're speaking with Barton Simmons from CBSSports.com. Excuse me, college football right around the corner. I actually have a cough button in the studio here, and I just didn't use it, so whatever. Two other games that stand out, and I won't ask you to go in-depth on both of them. Virginia Tech at Florida State's going to be a good one. Miami at LSU on Sunday, September 2nd. This is the thing with Miami. I liked them when I was a kid for all, you know, all the kid reasons. They had rap stars on the sideline, and they had swag, and they were just awesome. They were so different from any other college program. Then they became irrelevant for a long time, and now they're back. And the reason I kind of like this edition of the Miami Hurricanes has a lot to do with Coach Richt. I mean, he was at Georgia, yeah, had a lot of success. It was not enough. They basically rode him out of town, and he goes, you know what? I played at Miami. I'll go down there and coach. I'll live on, you know, I'll live on the beach, and I'll have a good life, and hopefully we'll win some games. And they're winning games, and I like that. I love his story. Hey, Georgia, not good enough for you? I'll go back to Miami, and I'll make them a pretty darn good football team.
Yeah, look, they need to, I mean, they got to get quarterback figured out. And if they have quarterback figured out this year, there's no telling what they can accomplish. Malik Rozier is probably going to be the starter, and he's solid. If not, you know, not spectacular, but they've got a ton of talent around them and talent all over the field. And I think you're right in the sense, like, Randy Shannon sort of muted that Miami swagger. And I think Mark Richt comes down there, and he's not going to just sort of let those guys run wild, but I think he understands the importance of that sort of that aura around the program. And you know, every summer now with their big showcase camps, like, they get all those alumni down there to be around that program and sort of inject that program with the history and the aura that I think makes Miami so special. And now they're starting to put together the talent on both sides of the ball where they really have a chance. So I think that Mark Richt is a great sort of middle ground there. And I think that they're finding that balance. And this is absolutely a year where we could see them have that sort of breakthrough. I mean, look, the college ball playoffs is not out of the question for a program that's got a pretty manageable schedule that has, I think, they've got as much coming back defensively as you're going to find outside of Clemson in the ACC. And look, again, if Malik Rozier can just be effective, I mean, Amon Richards is a stud. Travis Homer is turning into a big play guy in the backfield. Miami's got a chance to be really, really good. And by the way, you mentioned another game. Everyone's sleeping on Florida State. I mean, Florida State.
Yeah, look at 19, and it doesn't seem right.
Last year in week one. And if that doesn't happen, there's no telling what that season looks like last year. I think Willie Taggart has been really pleased with the personnel he's inherited down there. And if, you know, that's another program that just sort of no one's really talking about. I kind of have a hunch that they're going to go out there against the Virginia Tech team that's got a lot of injuries and a lot of attrition early in the season, playing some young guys. I would not be surprised at all if we see Florida State kind of make a statement week one and put the rest of the conference and the country on notice.
Yeah, I look at that Florida State, and I see a 19 as the ranking next to their name, and it just doesn't look right. It seems to me they're better than that. I think you're right on that. I was reading an article several weeks ago about Jimbo Fisher and his departure from Florida State and how shocked everybody was. But, you know, somebody's going to guarantee you $75 million and they basically can't fire you. Then you go to Texas A&M. I don't get it. I think that's a downward move. I don't even think it's a lateral move. But the point of the article was the administration at Florida State was meddling into how the athletic department spent their money. Like Jimbo Fisher, hey, we need a new weight room. No, we want to build a new something over here. Well, we need a new locker room. Well, no, we want to build. And so the athletic department and the school administration and the head coach were not even close to being on the same page. And Fisher became frustrated with it and found an escape hatch. Have you heard anything about maybe with Coach Taggart? Are they working on a way to get people back on the same page to make sure that they're spending money on the things that they want to spend money on?
Yeah, you know, I haven't specifically to that yet, but I look, Willie Taggart is Florida State's his dream job, like his ultimate dream job.
Right.
And he, you know, he goes down there, and he's a really, really good recruiter. He brings a totally different vibe to Florida State, but there's times when, and I think on both ends, I think it's from the perspective of Jimbo Fisher and probably from the perspective of Florida State too. Like, there are times when things could just get stale. And I think in a lot of ways, like, if you're bringing in someone to try to duplicate what Jimbo Fisher did to his level of success, that's a tough recipe. But because they're bringing in somebody like Willie Taggart, and he brings such a different vibe to that program, such a different personality, that head coach chair, I think that a lot of the roughness and abrasiveness and sort of the way that the administration has sort of lost alignment with the football program, I think that some of that can be sort of lubricated with Willie Taggart at the helm now. And so it's just, and I think the same thing is true for Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. It's just sort of a fresh start. And in some ways, I think it's sort of the best thing for all parties. I think it's a great thing for Jimbo Fisher to have that sort of backing at a place like Texas A&M, where they are just starving to be a national title contending program, and Florida State, where they just, you know, things have just gotten a little bit sour there, and all of a sudden Willie Taggart comes in and he's loose and he's energetic and he's happy to be there, and he's not going to be looking for, you know, testing the market every off season, and I think all four involved parties really kind of benefit from this move.
I was speaking with Barton Simmons from CBSSports.com. Just one final thing for you here, Barton. For locally, we cover Kansas and K-State and Mizzou, and they each have a storyline. With Mizzou, it's Drew Lock. Can he be a Heisman finalist? Is he going to be in the Heisman discussion? He set all the SEC records last year. At K-State, the storyline is, can the 77-year-old head coach Bill Snyder do it again? And I would never, ever, ever wager against Bill Snyder in anything.
Right.
And then the story of Kansas is Dave Beatty going to get fired before the season's over? And I hate saying that because I like David Beatty. He's a super cool dude. It's just, I mean, in three seasons to win three games, it's not working. So for you, is there one of those three storylines that stands out or is more intriguing for you?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by Missouri. And look, I think both of those other programs have some, and they've got some interesting seasons in front of them too, especially in a Big 12 that I think is heavy as any conference in the country. I'm just really intrigued by sort of how that all shakes out. It was the one conference, you know, when I was going through sort of preseason projections, I had no comfort level at all picking a week by week, game by game result, because they're all coin tosses. But I think when you go over to Missouri, like the Derek Dooley situation there, because everyone I talked to over there, it sounds as if conceptually it's a great system that he's bringing in, and there is a lot of NFL element, and they're going to change tempo to give their defense a chance, and they're giving Drew Lock a lot more tools to work with, and he truly is doing things behind the scenes right now in terms of Drew Lock here that few quarterbacks anywhere can do. I mean, he's got that kind of ability from everything I'm hearing, but look, we don't know if he's ever, you know, he's never called a game as an offensive coordinator, and that's a huge question mark. And what is, you know, it's so that's going to be really fascinating to see, because look, if you also look on the defensive side of the ball, they got Terry Beckner on the inside. They've got Jordan Elliott, who's eligible now, transfer from Texas, is supposed to be really good. They got some young defenders that are now taking a step forward. They could be decent on defense too. So Missouri is a team no one in the East is really talking about or thinking about, and yet if this works out from an offensive coordinator standpoint, I don't see why they can't be, you know, why they're not capable of beating anyone in the SEC East. So I'm very intrigued by Missouri, and I'm going to be anxiously watching their first couple of seasons just to see sort of what's on the slate for us, what's on deck for the season, because I think they could be a spoiler for a lot of teams.
All right, good stuff there, Barton Simmons. Thank you so much for joining us on a Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, talking college football, and we get rolling full speed ahead next week. So enjoy the short time that you have left before it's time to get going. But I appreciate your time so much. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. That is Barton Simmons, CBSSports.com. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Barton Simmons. Good stuff there. He wants to follow the Mizzou and the Drew. He thinks they can beat anybody in the SEC East. I like the confidence there. On that note, we will take a timeout, come back for our final segment here. You are listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is here. We're live in the Riley House Studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I believe I can see the future.
Just a few minutes left in the show today. Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is here. We're live in the Rally House Studios. And then we'll hand it off to Rudy Salazar for baseball tonight at noon as the Royals look to try to sweep Cleveland. Already won the series. Going for the sweep today. Get up there and see it. Good show today. We had Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com in the first hour. You can catch that on podcast. His thoughts on the performance against the Bears Saturday in the final exhibition game for the starters, because the game against the Packers will be wretched and horrible and unwatchable. At 10:25, we had Ali Trost on from the Blue Testament talk about Sporting KC. They've won all their games in the month of August. 4-0-0, all shutouts. So good stuff from Ali Trost. And then we just wrapped up with Barton Simmons from CBSSports.com. Good stuff from Barton. First time we've had him on the show. It's really good. Good stuff. With the big schedule next week, Nebraska today, speaking of college football, Nebraska announced their starting quarterback today. And it is a first in Nebraska football history.
Do tell, Brad.
You know, Scott Frost, the head coach, made the announcement, put out his week one depth chart, and the starting quarterback is going to be Adrian Martinez. Why is that big? Because he's just a freshman. He is a true freshman. He beat out the redshirt freshman, Tristan Gebbia. No true freshman has ever opened a season as the top quarterback for the Cornhuskers.
What?
Started in game one to start the season.
All right, I guess. That's a pretty... I mean, that's
ESPN.com.
A pretty... You're pulling pretty hard when you're making stats like that try and seem relevant. I mean, it is a fact, but whatever.
Well, Scott Frost making a splash, that's for sure. Maryland is in trouble again, if you can believe that.
I can, actually.
Well, of course, they had the player who died after going to the hospital after practice, after spending a couple weeks in the hospital. Now it's come to light that they had two former players, who were accused of sexual assault by a female student. Their lawyer was paid for by the head coach, DJ Durkin. Submitted an invoice for $15,000. That comes from the boosters, not from the athletic department. $15,000. Head coach signed off on it for a lawyer for his two players. That's got to be some kind of an NCAA violation. Like a huge one, right?
You think?
You would think.
God, what an awful situation.
And then they're going to have to find out who knew about this. Did the AD know about it?
That's so bad.
They're going to have to blowtorch the whole program.
I mean, they
scorched earth. All y'all got to go. Got to go.
Terrible.
Got to go. Since your Michigan Wolverines are playing Notre Dame this week, I was reading about they're doing some odd things during their practice to get them ready for their brutal travel schedule. Head coach Brian Kelly is going to throw the offense a curveball, or actually a soccer ball. He wants the players to score with a soccer ball, placing the ball in front of the center. Find a way. Craziest thing I've ever heard, the player said. It kind of shocked me. All this is supposed to get them ready for their brutal travel schedule, apparently. Maybe he's just being weird. College coaches do weird things sometimes. So do NFL coaches. Try to motivate the team. How about just play the game? With all this silly stuff.
You can't do that.
Your guy Jim Harbaugh takes his players to Europe? Now, I would love that.
Yeah, what an insane person trying to get some kids some culture.
If I wanted to play college football and I was guaranteed a trip to Europe, signing up for that. That's why Bill Self takes all those kids all over the world. They go to Korea, they go to Italy, they go wherever. Sign up for that. Free
they
trip.
Normally play basketball, though.
Yes.
The Michigan guys did not play much football.
Nope. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Again, thanks to all of our guests, Matt Derrick, Allie Trost, Barton Simmons. You can get that all on the podcast if you missed anything. Thanks to Jed Marshall for setting up another great Sunday show. I'll be back in here tomorrow from 10 to 2, filling in on the program for Seren Petro. So tune in from 10 to 2 or hang around. If you're listening to the Border Patrol in the morning, hang around. I'll give you some good stuff. Curtis Seabolt will set up a good show. My name is Brad Porter. Thanks to Jed Marshall. We'll see you next time. Enjoy your Sunday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.